Hi there, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of the Chorus Project podcast. I'm Tom, Artistic Director of Upstart Theatre in London, and I'll be your host as we speak to artists, activists, change makers, and citizens across Europe. We're making this podcast as part of the Chorus Project, an international theatre project about democracy and justice, which is taking place in Germany, Austria, the Republic of North Macedonia, and the United Kingdom in 2019 and 2020. It's a collaboration between Pathos Theater in Munich, Theater am Lend in Graz, the Mukitzer Youth Cultural Center in Skopje, and Upstart Theater in London. We're making 4 new pieces of theater inspired by the Oresteia, the only surviving trilogy of ancient Greek tragedies, which explores the journey from a world driven by violence and revenge to one governed by law and democratic justice. So, at a time when democracy is facing increasing threats all across Europe, we want to be able to use theater to ask, what does democracy mean to all of us today? And alongside making these 4 new pieces of theatre, we're also making this podcast to share what we're learning and to open up our conversation about democracy to voices from across Europe. To start us off, I've been talking to our colleagues on the Chorus Project. So in our last episode, I chatted to Angelika Fink and Katja Kettner, 2 of the directing team in Germany, about the different ways we work and about the political power and purpose of theatre. For today's episode, I spoke with 2 of our colleagues from what's now known as the Republic of North Macedonia, Kristina Bozuska and Yasmina Vasileva. I'd met Kristina and Yasmina before in January 2019 when we visited them both in Skopje, and we spoke at Shoreditch Town Hall in East London in April of 2019. For both of them, it was their first time in London, and it was so great for me to be able to welcome them, to hear about their work, and to find out what it's like working as an artist and activist at the other end of Europe. So here we go, and I hope you enjoy the conversation as much as I did.
Okay, I'll be first. I'm Kristina Bozuska. I'm coming from Macedonia. I'm working with the Macedonian team on the Chorus Project. I'm a visual artist, and I'm working on the artistic stage, on the set, on the costume, on the visual layout of the performance.
Perfect. Thanks, Kristina.
Okay, this is my voice. I'm Yasmina Vasileva. I'm also part of the Macedonian team.
Yasmina, There we go.
I'm an actress, but I won't be an actress in this project. I will actually take another role because I want to, practice a little bit more into the production of the project and everything. So I'm going to try to do different things here.
Cool. So how do you both come to be involved in the Chorus Project? What's the origin story? I'm doing, everyone's like kind of Avengers
so
origin
off
myth.
Off the record. No, you're kidding.
We'll tell you later, off the record.
See, now I really want to know and record it.
I was invited to be part of this project.
That's the most boring answer. Why did you get involved in this? Someone asked me. But yeah, fine, okay.
Okay, well, I'll tell you why I was interested in being part of this project?
Even better answer.
Okay. So I really, about this project, what I really liked is that it's not just like any other theatrical piece, but it's an experiment, it's a long process that also, I mean, it's an international, it's great that it's going to be a collaboration with other different teams from other countries, so we can like really share ideas and meet people and hear different thoughts and from different backgrounds and cultures. But I also liked the fact that this project specifically works really with the context of the place where you come from, and the Chorus part is going to be rewritten, and it's going to use it will be written with people from the place. So it's really relevant for our country, for the place we're coming from, and because for me as an artist, I really I'm interested in social political context, and that is reflected in my artworks, and I found that similar thing in this project where you have a chorus that is connected with the place. So for me, that was important. The participative part, the people that are not actors, but regular citizens that will take part in the project, and they will develop the work as well, as much as the professionals working in the project, but together with the citizens. So for me, that was maybe the most appealing part.
Great. Thank you, Christine.
So I can add to this also that Macedonia until recently was really pretty closed up for this kind of projects. Mm. So we couldn't really find projects where we can work together with other European countries or different countries from abroad, and with which we can cooperate firstly, but then we can compare in what kind of state our countries are, what kind of state the democracies in our countries are, and everything. And the more intimate story about how all this started was actually because we're very close friends.
Yeah.
Kristina and Ivica are married, and I'm their friend. I know Ivica for a very long time. So actually, these kind of projects were the ones that we dreamt about every time we were together having lunch or having coffee and everything, and talking about where should our future in Macedonian theater be. So we really needed to open up, because we are employees in national state theaters, but that is a totally different kind of performances. And we needed something new, and we hope that one day we will get something like this.
What's the experience of working on this project like compared to if you were working on a project in a state theater in Macedonia, for example?
Oh, well, when you work at the state theater, actually, you create your repertoire according to the needs of the audience, because you have to satisfy all the tastes, because it should be for all people. So you don't pretty much have a choice of what you're going to do. So in the same season, you're going to do a vaudeville, you're going to do Chekhov, you're going to do maybe some contemporary German playwrights. We want to work on German playwrights. For us, it's like, oh my God.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's very rarely that you get an opportunity to have your own input. Mm. You have your own input when you act, of course, because it is your interpretation some way, but in the overall production and in what you really want to say with it and everything, you don't really have to have a chance to go out there to spread your idea or everything. So doing this kind of projects, first, I experience everything on an intimate level. Mm. Like, first, what it means just for me, and then for everything around me, for the whole society and everything. So for me, it was making friends, of course, making new friends, learning a lot from them. This is not just my Macedonian inferiority complex speaking, but we really, really want to open up and learn new things. Mm. So.
Yeah. How much flexibility do you have about the kind of work that you're doing, the kind of productions that you're involved in? Or is it very much like someone says, or you as a company decide, we're doing a Chekhov, we get to do this German playwright this time around, but we have to make sure, we have to plan this season 6 months in advance or whatever. Like, what's the kind of, how much kind of flexibility do you have? How much input do you have in that program?
Well, it depends how much you fight for it.
Ah, I see. Okay. Yeah.
So it's the same situation with every national institution that is working with culture. Mm. Because you have to answer to the majority of the people,
right.
For example.
Yeah.
You have to cover them all, what they want to see and everything. Because the Macedonian culture market is not commercially Nasochen.
Directed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we don't make our existence out of selling tickets.
Sure.
We are financed by the government, and they don't really care how much we give back.
Okay.
Yeah. So the tickets are very, very cheap. Mm. For example, it is like £1, £2.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing more than that, and maybe three in Skopje or something. And everybody can, and also we have a lot of allowances for example, socialny случай, как
сказать, social welfare or like
for people who are on social welfare, also for students, for it is free for people who are younger than 25 years,
right.
It is free and everything. So everybody has an access to the theater.
Mm.
I think.
Yeah. Which is fantastic, and God, I wish we had that here. You, as you've seen, I'm sure, like it's we have this really different setup where, yeah, there is public funding, but it's only ever a portion. So we have to make, you know, depending on the show and depending on the company that's doing it. But for with Upstart Theatre, we have to make probably between 20% to 50% of the income has to be on ticket sales for each production. And so yeah, we find, you know, although we don't have to do Chekhov, but we have to make damn sure that we sell tickets for whatever experimental crazy thing we're trying to do. Otherwise, the whole thing falls to bits.
On the other hand, like what Yasmina was saying, of course, that's the positive side. But on the other hand, there's this thing that the only way that culture is sponsored in Macedonia is through the state. So there's no access to public funding. There's no extra funds that you can apply to. There's no, I don't know, sponsors. So if you're a freelance artist or you want to do something, you have a plan and you of a project, it can be really interesting. But then the financial part is the problem, because as I said, everything is, and if it doesn't fit that state logic, then it's hard to realize a project. So on the other hand, what you were saying, that what you have in London, in England, and probably in all this, in the other European countries that we are now at this moment collaborating with, you have this access of public funding, which is really, really helpful. And in Macedonia, we don't have that.
Yeah.
Everything is state financed by the state.
Mm.
And sometimes that can be a little bit tricky. It can be, if it doesn't fit that state logic, if it's not too traditional, or, you know, there is like kind of a rigid form of how the projects should look like.
Yeah.
There's not so much experimentation. There is not space for experiments. Mm. So on the other hand, that can be the problem.
Yeah, right.
Even when this conservative party was on rule, was ruling, we had a lot of interference about how to spread their ideology, their propaganda through theater.
Yeah.
They pretty much knew how to spread the propaganda through theater.
Right.
So it was one of their tools to get the voters to them and everything. So it was, that is one of the scariest things when it is funded by the government.
Yeah, because it's directly from the government rather than like a...
There was such retraditionalizing, how to put it, of the themes that were supposed to be shown in the theater. For example, there were a lot of... they formed this new theater called Theater of Comedy.
Okay.
But the themes that they funded were against abortion.
Okay.
Especially, and this is like, the women were the ones who were spreading the anti-women propaganda. Yeah, they put a woman to be the manager of this theater of comedy. It became very, very popular immediately because of the acceptability of the genre. So it became very popular immediately. It became like attracting a lot of people, and at the same time, they were like spreading their propaganda, especially from that point.
Yeah, yeah. And presumably with the change of government after the Colour Revolution, do you find that the propaganda has kind of switched the other way? Or is it sort of, do you feel like that it's slightly freer in terms of what you're able to do now and what the government will fund now compared to a few years ago?
Yes, there is a lot of difference.
Yeah. There is a big difference, that's for sure. But again, the problem is that there's always a shortage in the funds for culture. It's always the smallest budget for culture. Yeah. And it's a cake that has to be broken into tiny, tiny pieces so everyone is happy. Mm. So the new government, like they wanted it to have the culture to everybody, to give culture to everybody.
Yeah.
But then that is a small piece for every participant, right?
Yeah.
And everyone was not happy with it. So then there's not a perfect answer for the problem in Macedonia, as I say, because it's the smallest piece of the cake from the budget.
Yeah.
And it's always culture gets the smallest part,
right?
The smallest funding. So.
I guess that feels like that's the kind of thing that's the same everywhere. You know, like. And I think we're really lucky in lots of ways in the UK, and I don't want to sort of diminish that, but at the same time, you know, we've had now, it's 9 years of Conservative-led government in the UK, and a lot of their policies have been around this idea of austerity, which is basically removing the national debt by defunding public services, and of course, culture is the first thing to go. What have been the most exciting parts of being involved in the project so far, and like about this weekend?
Well, personally, first of all, we would not be even able to come to London, right, to England,
yeah,
if we were not being invited.
Yeah,
you know, you Tom know, because you had to send us a letter of invitation and the program. Mm. What is the reason for the visit of England? So,
yeah,
for us coming from Macedonia, we have to apply for a visa. It's a long process. Maybe, I don't know, it took us 2 months to get all the documents in order to get the visa, in order to come to London.
Mm.
So just the fact for us was exciting. Just the fact that we were coming to London.
Yeah.
And so it's just exploring the places and the city and just the area, because we didn't have time. It was a really short time we were here and we have these meetings. But just to walk around the area, it's already exciting.
Yeah.
For me, it's even more. It's like, for me, it's like meeting your imaginary boyfriend from high school. Like, yes, because I was like growing up in the 90s. I was a teenager in the 90s, and Britpop culture, Britpop had a very big influence on how we shaped our aesthetics, our way of thinking and everything. So, like, meeting London for the first time, for me, it was exciting as that. And I'm like very happy that I'm not disappointed.
Good.
That is even better.
So
yeah, that is even better. So, yeah, we only saw like this close neighborhood, and I can't wait to meet the greater London.
Yeah, so you're here for like a week, right? Till Thursday kind of time?
Yes.
So, and yeah, you're going up to Crouch End for a bit, right? Like hipster North London. It's great, you'll love it.
Just to tell you that, because when I don't know about Christina, but when I go somewhere, I want to try to make a little habits, like to imagine if I were living here, what would my habits be living here? So I took your advice about the coffee shop, and I drink coffee every day there.
Hey.
I went there too.
Nice.
Today.
Cool.
So, yeah.
I did want to ask a bit about the visa process, just because I think a lot of the people who are listening to this will be probably either in the UK or in Germany or Austria, and, you know, part of either EU countries or, who knows, by the time this comes out, countries that might not be in the EU but still are aiming to have a very kind of close and integrated, more or less integrated relationship. Like, so am I right in thinking that you can't apply for a tourist visa as a Macedonian person, or you have to provide documentation even if you're coming over purely for tourist purposes?
Yes,
even if you're coming as a tourist, yes, you'll have to still have a reason why you're coming.
Yeah.
And then even if you have, you have to submit like from a bank account document that you have a lot of money on your bank account, yeah. Reservation from a hotel and all that. And even then, you also have to say...
somebody to guarantee for you from here.
Right.
You still need to have someone from the UK that is a guarantee. Yeah, you're right, to guarantee for your trip.
Mm.
And you need to be employed. You need to own a property in Macedonia or something so that you have a proof.
Yeah.
That there's something waiting for you back in Macedonia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the thing is, that Barbara yesterday asked us both if you had a chance to move here, because we are all talking, oh my God, London, London. If you had a chance, somebody asks you right now, would you move? We have a job for you and you move right here. Would you like accept it immediately or hesitate?
Mm.
And we both said we would hesitate.
Yeah.
Because it's not like, it's very attractive to just come here.
Mm.
But we also want to live in our home.
Yeah.
We want to leave home, not leave like abandon home. Like
No.
We want to live where we live right now.
Yeah.
But to be more open to projects like this.
Yeah.
So if we have opportunities to collaborate from where we live right now, we would never then abandon our homes.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to connect it to the great exodus that young people from Macedonia do all the time, because we were talking this morning about how many, how great number of Macedonian young people just want to leave the country, and they are doing at the moment everything to leave it, or they already left.
Mm.
So
this morning we were talking about it, how many young people are abandoning, leaving Macedonia and migrating to the other European countries.
Uh-huh.
And it's like 170,000 people that already left Macedonia. Maybe not just young people, but for the last, I don't know how many years, maybe the last 10 years or more, 170,000 people have left.
And that's out looking for a population better future. Of not all
less
that
than
many,
2 million
right?
people 2 million in people. Macedonia, less than 2 million. So
God.
That's
even
a big percent.
If you don't know the statistics, you can feel it yourself, because every month you get one of your close friends or relatives or somebody leave out of the country. So so that's why everywhere we travel, we have somebody, you know?
Yeah.
We always say, I have a cousin there.
Yeah,
oh,
you're
in Munich, I will sleep at my cousin's.
Yeah.
Oh, you're in London, I will sleep at my friend's and everything, so.
And then, and so obviously that side of it is kind of, that's kind of great, right? Like, you know people wherever you go, but it's also that sense of home not being home for a lot of people of your generation and younger, right? Of our generation and younger, we're all the same kind of age, I think. So there's a question that I'm asking everyone for these interviews, for these podcast conversations, which is, what does democracy mean to you?
Well, when we have this question for the first time, when we had these meetings, and the first thing that came to my mind in terms of answering that question, coming from Macedonia, for us, democracy is something that we look in other places, not in Macedonia. Something that happens, democracy is something that is happening in the other countries, but not in Macedonia. Especially when we had this problem, 10 years, more than 10 years actually, the Conservatives, Nationalistic Party, part of that was the government. We had like really ruined all the pillars of democracy, everything that democracy means.
Mm.
So this connects with what we were saying, that so many people left Macedonia and are migrating to other countries because they're looking for a better future, right? They're looking a place where they can find democracy, because that's not what we have or we had in Macedonia. So democracy is something that you aim for,
right?
For us, something that you aim for.
You said, if you remember, some time ago, like you said it like a slogan, and it was great. Democracy is something that happens somewhere else.
Yeah, something
you
that
said
happens.
It like that.
Yeah,
it's her slogan.
I'm writing that down.
Christina's slogan. For me, it's something we are all saying like farewell to. Like we are sending the democracy somewhere, like it is on a dying bed, like it is supposed to be reimagined, like it's supposed to be resurrected, it is supposed to be resurrected and everything. It's like something that's already done.
Right. Yeah, it's a dead or dying idea.
Especially in our country, we were telling you when you were in Macedonia, we kind of told you our political situation for the last years that was going on, that was happening. Mm. So we didn't have like a normal justice system. It is completely collapsed. We had like literally criminals that were in the government.
Yeah.
That were doing all these crimes, and none of them got convicted or anything. Then there were a lot of scandals. Then there is this Skopje 2014 that happened. You know about, we were telling about this architectural project, the revamp of the city center of Skopje, and all of it was being done illegal. Nothing was starting even from there. You can see that there's no system that actually works. From our urbanistic and architectural planning, there's no such a thing. There's no planning. It's only someone's interest, someone that is on power. Mm. And when you think about that, you can see the wider picture that it's kind of democracy has collapsed completely.
And there is a lot of mistrust in everything, not just the institutions, not just the politicians and everything, but like in everything.
Mm.
Everyone suspects everyone. It's like very, very scary state right now.
Yeah.
So, and I wanted to say that the last few years we were like solving all of our problems with capitulatia. What is the word when you not give up, but to surrender? With surrendering, like we all surrendered to everything. Also, this with the name change.
Yes.
We knew that that was, even if I am pro, for example, I knew that, like, how to put it, in Macedonian we say the goltnam žaba, to
swallow
a frog. Like, something very bitter in order to try and, like, create something, some position from where we can go on.
Yeah.
But it is again by surrendering.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And in terms of that idea of surrendering, is that something that is, do you feel that on like a person-to-person level? Or is it more of a kind of your relationship to the institutions and the kind of political body?
I think more in terms of the individual and the institution and the system.
Mm.
After all the things that were happening in Macedonia, and then the protests that took place for 2 years and more, and how people really tried to bring democracy, and then to bring system that will function, that will work for the people, to bring justice. And then all people had all their hopes after putting the nationalistic party down, and then the change didn't happen.
Yeah.
It didn't happen at all. It didn't, not only that it didn't happen quickly, but it's, people feel like it's not happening.
Yeah.
The big change that everybody was kind of hoping for. So now I think that's why everyone that was fighting so hard of making a change, everybody kind of feel disappointed or hopeless, and that's why Yasmina was saying you feel kind of you're giving up, you surrender.
Yeah.
It's like you don't have any more you don't have any more the strength to fight. So then it's like you refocus yourself only on your
personal
small
fights.
Personal relations and your small circle bubble.
I mean, obviously the context is really different, but I feel that here a lot at the minute. as well. I hate talking about Brexit, but we almost have to at this point in the conversation, maybe because it's something that everybody, it seems, is angry about one way or another. You know, the side that lost the referendum, well, we're angry because we lost and we think it's a terrible idea. But the side that won are angry because it still hasn't happened yet. And we find ourselves in this state of, like, stasis, like paralysis, where just you can't move this way and you can't move that way. And at the same time, you know, we've had all these environmental protests over the last couple of weeks here in Extinction Rebellion, who were kind of amazing and exciting. And they're going, guys, the world is on fire. Like, it's actually on fire. And everybody is kind of, you know, we're just, I feel exhausted quite a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And similarly, yeah, I find I'm just kind of focusing on, I'm just getting on, I'm doing what I do. You know, sometimes it feels to me like the only thing you can do as a artist in sort of troubled times is just continue. And that's the kind of pathetic but important act of resistance or something. I don't know if that makes any sense. Yeah, yeah. I'm just kind of talking now.
But maybe it's just the feeling that our generation has.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe that's why Extinction Rebellion is great, that it is formed by very young people.
Yeah.
Like 20 years younger than
us. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's their real fight right now for them. So
yeah,
it's great.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, like we can kind of, I do find it really inspiring. I feel like I can go, okay, these guys still think there's something worth fighting for. Mm. All right, then, let's get back up and get on with it, you know, and stop sitting around here complaining all the time. Yeah. And of course, you're working in the project, you're working with very young people, right? Like, that's with high school students. And how are you finding, do you find their attitudes towards the system in Macedonia the same as yours, or are they different? How are they changing?
They are even more indifferent.
Right. Mm. Yeah.
Like, they have even more mistrust.
Yeah.
They have mistrust a priori. We had to experience everything and then mistrust the system.
Yeah.
They have a priori.
It's built in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they just.
Yeah. For us, for our generation, it's a bit different because we were born in one system, then we were raised in another, then we had, like, in our late 20s and 30s, we had this nationalist government, mm-hmm. but we were aware of how it could be, how it was, how it should be. But these young people, they only know they were all raised in a completely nationalistic, conservative setting. Mm. And then all the mistrust that they have is valid, because all of the, I don't know, protests or rebellions, everything that was being done, it was never fruitful. It was never, it never had a result. So, of course, they have already lived all their young lives with the idea that they cannot change anything. Mm. That whatever they try, it's impossible to change.
Yeah.
It's impossible for them to make something. Mm. So that's why they're indifferent, and that's valid.
Yeah.
I completely understand why are they indifferent. And that's why many of them are actually deciding to leave. That's why many of them are planning to migrate. And there are so many statistics and enqueta, when you ask young people whether you would like to stay in Macedonia or move, bigger percent says that they are planning to move somewhere.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're indifferent is, it has a reason. It's because of everything that was happening in terms of politics and everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you, in the work that you're doing at the moment, or beyond the work that you're doing at the moment, do you see a way kind of through or past that indifference towards a way of engaging that feels more active, do you think? Or is it, are we done?
Yeah. Well, I think that's why we, as a team, decided to work with young people.
Yeah.
So that we can challenge them and see if they can be more proactive. Mm. Even though there are, of course, there are a lot of young people that are really active and,
yeah.
Of course, but this is me generalizing.
Sure.
And just to hear their voice, to hear their perspectives, their interests, their thoughts on what can it be done in Macedonia. Yeah,
and I guess it's partly by someone gives you the opportunity to get your voice heard, and then you start to learn that your voice can have some meaning, right?
I cannot see the solution right now. For me, it's like all blur and black, but I know it's out there.
Yeah.
I know we'll be there eventually.
Yeah.
Maybe we are not maybe going to come up with that. Maybe people after us will come up with that, but I'm sure it will be there.
That's suddenly sounding very Uncle Vanya. You know, like, oh, we'll keep working, Uncle Vanya, and one day the generation in 1,000 years, they will sometimes be happy, or whatever that phrase is. But I get that. I think sometimes that's how I feel. I think like you, Yasmina, I kind of feel quite positive about the future, even though there isn't necessarily a lot of evidence to point to it. And maybe that's being an artist, or maybe it's just trying to stay positive in a difficult landscape. But being able to have both of you come here and sort of take whatever we're all learning together as a group through the weekend back to Skopje and back to working with those young people, and then how does that then progress something like a small aspect of civil society and individuals and small groups of people making a small change in how they look at the world. And maybe that's it's a contribution, even if it's not a sort of actively practical contribution to political change. I mean, do you think art can make that kind of change in the world or not? I really don't know anymore. You're shaking your head.
Yeah, I'm kind of really idealistic. I'm an idealist, and I do believe that art has that power. Maybe not on a global level, but doing it from really small fonts of fight, doing it from the, like, as an outsider, doing it in, like, from different areas, and then those smaller fights, I think, can have a bigger impact.
Mm.
So as I said, it might be naive, kind of, but I still do believe that.
Yeah.
Even if it is that on a very small scale.
Yeah.
Even if it is on a small scale.
Yeah, me too. I also believe that the art has the potential of that. So still, it has that. And always will have the potential to do the change.
Yeah. And kind of, it feels to me sometimes like on the smallest scale, like between people, that's when it feels most possible. And then when you look at bigger structural political changes, there's like if there was a graph of my faith, it would sort of tail off, you know, like us in this room, I feel like you could change my mind about anything and we could change something together about how we think. But whether we could then take that change out into the world and force a change on kind of the bigger political scale, that I don't know. On our own, probably not, but maybe with 10,000 other people, perhaps. But yeah.
Yes. And not just art, like what we were talking about yesterday, about how pop culture shapes our reality right now, and how it educates the younger generation about the next fights and everything. And what Barbara said, that, for example, maybe Greta Thunberg is right now a product, not a product, like she's a person, she's already an idol, iconic figure.
Mm.
She's a person, but we all identify the fight with her already, with a young girl who will fight ultimately with the greater evil, with the and everything.
Yeah.
That it is pretty much cultivated in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it's
so she mentioned
Game of Thrones.
We mentioned
yeah.
Katniss Everdeen and Arya Stark.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil you anything.
Do not spoil me. Otherwise, bad things will happen.
Yeah, but it has a potential. We see the potential.
Yeah.
We see the result from the last 10 years of TV shows.
Sure. And we imagine change.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. That feels like a nice point to wrap up, I think. Unless there's stuff that you guys want to add, but
imagine change, I think it's the perfect ending.
So that was a conversation with Kristina Bozhushka and Yasmina Vasileva from the Republic of North Macedonia. We recorded this conversation back in April, and it's July now. Listening back to it, I'm really struck by how much optimism both Kristina and Yasmina had about the future and about the power of the arts and culture, and how tired and jaded I sounded by comparison. To be fair, I guess I feel like we're swallowing a fair few frogs of our own here in the UK at the moment. I'm writing and recording this during a scorching and really quite scary heatwave on the day when the Brexit campaign leader Boris Johnson becomes Prime Minister here in the UK. But I actually feel a lot more optimistic today than I did back in April about the future and about the work that we're doing. And I think a big part of that is as a result of listening back to this interview and hearing Kristina and Yasmina both talking about how they work to make the kinds of art they want to see in the world against a quite challenging set of circumstances and placing young people at the heart of their thinking. And I also feel really struck by how much we've got in common despite our two countries being at opposite ends of Europe and having such differences in size, wealth, power, culture, history. And for me, that's a huge part of what the Chorus Project is about for both the professional artists like the three of us and the non-professional performers involved who you'll be meeting in later episodes. It's all about realizing the challenges and fears and hopes that we all share and knowing that we're all dealing with them in our different ways, but still supporting one another while we do so. So I guess a question that's going to be at the front of my mind as we go on with the project and as we go on with this podcast is, how can we keep using the arts and culture to bring people together and to have the broadest, most honest and open conversations that we can? So if you want to be part of the conversation, why not drop me a line on Twitter at Upstart Theatre, or you can get in touch with me via the Upstart Theatre website. And for now, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. The Chorus Project is part-funded by the Creative Europe Programme of the European Union, and it's supported in the UK by the Unity Theatre Trust. In the UK, Upstart Theatre is presenting our show Beneath the City as part of the Chorus Project in January 2020. We'll be at Birmingham Rep Theatre from the 16th to the 18th of January, and tickets are available online now. You can find out more at www.upstart-theatre.co.uk. Thanks. Bye-bye. Thank you.